Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
We are jumping into another Seahawks draft profile, and I got to be honest with you guys, I have no idea whether or not this player will be available. Probably not, but there is a slim chance he could be, which makes today's draft profile especially fun. So let's get to it with the number 16 overall pick. Your Seattle Seahawks select tight end Brock Bowers. Bump, tell us what we need to know about not just the top tight end in the class, but one of the best pass catchers and athletes in the draft.
Brock Bowers, they have him listed at 6'3", 243 now. When he played last year, he was 6'3", 230. So maybe he's looking at the NFL and saying, I got to bulk up a little bit, man, because if there's a concern about Brock, it would be his blocking. Not that he's a bad blocker, just that he can get better at using his hands and being involved in a run game because he's going to be attached to the line of scrimmage. I also think he's the type of tight end that can be moved out. You put him in a slot. Another spot you can put him at, or at least I saw Georgia use him this way, is at the H-back. So it's pretty much just a glorified fullback. You put him close to the line of scrimmage, maybe behind the B-gap, and you can run split zone with him, meaning the running back runs to the left. He's blocking the DN to the opposite side to the right. So with him being able to put him in that position, now you can leak him out in the backfield. You use that movement to influence the eyes of the linebackers and play these games. I talk about that split zone. Now you can run that split zone, fake the block to the end, chip, bam, he is in the flats and getting him the football. Also, inside the red zone, I wouldn't do this play or use him like this, anything outside of 10 yards we were talking about in reference to the goal line, but use them in jet sweeps. We saw Georgia do that. Again, the way that you get defenses confused and their eyes all jacked up is lots of movement, and that's a tight end that can do that because typically when you're moving the tight end, you're shifting the strength of the formation and the defense has to respond. You move him there, you move him back. He's versatile in that sense. But the reason why everybody loves this young man is because his freshman year, he had 13 touchdowns. His sophomore year, he had 7. His senior year, he had 6. But it's the run after the catch. This young man has been comped to George Kittle for a reason, because once that football is in his hand, he can go. He's not going to wow you with a great 40 time. He's not going to run past safeties or DBs. I haven't seen a tight end able to do that since, honestly, Vernon Davis was the last one who could catch the rock, man, and just get busy. We ran like a 4.3 or something like that. For the most part, these guys, fast tight ends, hover around 4 or 5, and that has been shown to be good enough in the NFL to get her done. Also, what I like about this young man, his accolades. It's not just, okay, we're projecting him to be a great tight end. He's done it. First team All-American, freshman of the year. He led all tight ends in yak. He also got the award for the best tight end in college football. He plays in a tough division. We all know the SEC is a good conference. You're going to get a good competition there. But it's the versatility. He is what we expect great tight ends to be now. The days of Jason Witten are gone. You're going to have some tight ends like that because there are going to be times where you pack it in and you want to get big and maybe you can leak a tight end out and dump him over the top. But no, Jason Witten, big ups, one of the best tight ends to ever do it. True. And for his era, he was what you wanted out of a tight end. But those days are over. You need a guy like Brock Bowers to be versatile. Again, you match him up or pair him up with a more traditional tight end, but you need that elusive guy. So when I look at Brock Bowers, I see a guy you can line up in a slot, attach him to the line of scrimmage, put him in the backfield at an H-back, use him in the run game, use him in the play-action game, leak him out the backfield, run him with your shallows and your deep crosses or whatnot. A knock on him also is just they're trying to figure out if he's going to be good against man or is he just a zone type of product. Because when you are one-on-one with a safety or a nickel, whoever's going to line up against you, and they're pressing you at the line of scrimmage, you got to have a plan. You got to have some moves, some wiggle. I think he can do that, but I think because of his talent, no one really challenged him in that way. They go, look, we're going to sit back. Even if we do play man, we're going to give him room to release because he's that deadly. That transition is going to be the biggest transition for him when he gets to the league, because you're going to have guys that play strong safety and nickel who don't give two you-know-whats, or the D-coordinators don't, and they're going to say, all right, rookie, show me what you got. Are you as good as what you've shown on film? But as far as the college games go, he has dominated. He is the best tight end in this draft. I think he has the potential to be a George Kittle type of dude. I'm glad they're comping him to George Kittle because it makes complete sense.
Which is, ironically, day 3, right? Was George Kittle a 5th-round pick? or my
no, he was late. I think he was the fifth round. Yeah.
The thing about Brock Bowers is nearly every single mock draft I've seen has him being a top 10 pick. I have not seen him later than 10, though I'm sure that those drafts are out there. And this is primarily because he reportedly has a meeting with the Jets. Aaron Rodgers is going to be part of that meeting. I'm not having my quarterback and everyone check a vibe with a player unless I'm hoping that they're going to vibe and they're going to have a great connection. And this is a guy that can help us. He can be he's a starter day one, as any top 10 pick would hopefully be. And he's a guy that adds an explosive weapon, not as much as obviously a top-tier wide receiver, but a really fun weapon for Aaron Rodgers, who can be pretty picky and can be pretty critical of his weapons. That being said, if he slips past number 10, all of a sudden you have some teams there, minus Chicago, who will probably take Roma Dunze, you know, looking for a pass catcher there, who need quarterbacks or defensive players. So there is a chance that he slips a little further or skips a couple more spots if he does slide out of the top 10, which, again, I do not anticipate him to do. But, like, there's a world where he's at 16 for Seattle.
Yep.
How would you feel with them taking him
offensive
lineman?
I've been saying this. Brock Bowers has been on my list for a month now. If he's available, you take him. Now, if he's available and Troy's available at UW, now we got some issues. What exactly are you going to do?
Well, let's pretend that both are.
All right, they both are. I'm still going offensive lineman. I think Noah Fant is that type of tight end as far as being elusive, run after the catch, being more of a route runner. You're not – maybe eventually you will see a tight end who can run routes like receivers, but right now I can look at a silhouette of a route and tell you if it's a receiver or a tight end. But they are evolving. They're getting better. If both are available, I think you got to go with the offensive line because it's all about protecting the quarterback. The Hawks did a good job of signing a veteran. We talked about Tomlinson did we talk about him yet? Yeah, in our headline rewrites, we talked about him. I think that's a step in the right direction. I'm all for guys who make plays and bolstering the skill guys, but it's all about the bigs, man. If I got to choose between Bowers and Troy, I'm going Troy.
Let's say that the Jets switch it up. Instead of going with Bowers, they need to add to their offensive line. Let's say they take Troy Fautanu, or maybe the Saints, who are in there at number 14, take Troy Fautanu to protect Derek Carr, and he's no longer available, and Brock Bowers is. And at this point, Brock Bowers has slipped so much further than people think. Taking him seems like the obvious choice. It falls in line with John Schneider's philosophy that he talked about with Wyman and Bob. We take the best player available. I have no doubt that if Brock Bowers is available at 16, he is the highest player on their board.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they have some individual things that they love about players who have put them up there with him, but, like, he is a dynamic player. So tell me how to make sense of this. From Shiel Kapadia of The Ringer, he says, in the last 10 years, 9 tight ends have been picked in the first round of the NFL draft. Those tight ends have combined for a total of 0 all-pro nods and 1 1,000-yard season. Out of the 9, only David Njoku got a second contract from the team that drafted him. And he says, you know, you're coming up on Kyle Pitts and Dalton Kincaid. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do something there. There's no reason to think they wouldn't. But it is not a great track record of tight ends drafted in the first round.
This was the past how many years?
10 years.
10 years.
9 okay. Tight ends picked in the first round.
Here's what I'll say with that. You can't ignore stats.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can do what you want with that information, but I'm not dumb enough to ignore that. What I will say is that the tight end position has changed drastically in 10 years, that you're not getting the same type of player in 2014 than you're getting in 2024. You're not asking them to do the same things in 2014 that you're asking them to do in 2024. So I get that logic, and it makes complete sense, but there are shifts that happen. Remember when running backs were going top 10? Remember when running backs were like a high commodity and everybody wanted a great running back, and you're fighting for a position to get a running back? Now, where do you get running backs? Second day. You're not, unless you're getting a Saquon Barkley, you're not moving up to get yourself a running back. So I think you have to look at how the game has changed and how offensive coordinators are using their tight ends. I would say, hopefully where you and I are like on ESPN national radio in 10 years, right? But say we're still here in 10 years, okay? And we look back and look at that same stat. I can guarantee you, you're going to have more hits of tight ends going over 1,000 yards and having the run after the catch. So, yeah, that stat is true, obviously, because the numbers are real, but it doesn't account for just the change that's happened in football. So, and also, there's only going to be one or two tight ends a year, if that, that are going to be considered a top 15 pick.
And what do those tight ends typically have? If you're looking at George Kittle, he's on an amazing offense. If you're looking at Travis Kelce, he's playing with the best quarterback in the game. If you're looking at some of these tight ends who have been selected in the first round, who's thrown to Kyle Pitts? I'm not saying Kyle Pitts is going to end up playing up to the standard of being a number four overall pick, but who has he had throwing to him?
This Drake is not, London?
No one on Atlanta's
offense. Not Drake London, sorry.
Yeah. Desmond.
Ritter, thank you.
No one on Atlanta's offense has been phenomenal. They have so much invested in that offense and have had no return. Noah Fant with the Denver Broncos. When he was with Denver, who was throwing to him? You know what I mean? Like, I think that you can look at some of these teams and go, honestly, they probably should have taken a quarterback mm-hmm. and not that tight end. If that tight end went to another team, maybe it looks different. TJ Hawkinson, really solid tight end. He's just not with his original team, former number eight overall pick.
Who's he with, the Lions now?
Vikings.
Oh, the Vikings. Yeah, yeah, with the Vikings. Yeah, it's, again, pass catches are always going to be directly connected to their quarterback. And the quarterback is going to be connected to the offensive line and the offensive coordinator. The neck bone's connected to the shoulder bone. Shoulder bone's connected to, you know what I mean? That's just how this thing works. And I think there's an opportunity here. I think Brock could be the tight end that officially changes the way that they're looked at and the way that they're drafted. He could be the guy to say, all right, well, we took Brock. He's elusive. He looks like George Kittle. Maybe they add more value. Their pay starts to change a bit. Then nothing stays the same in the NFL. There's going to be a day where the NFL starts packing the game back in again. I guarantee you, because it all comes in waves and shifts. But the more athletic these guys get, the more the game is being spread out, the more a tight end is going to be valuable. So Brock has an opportunity. You mentioned the stat of the last 10 years of what hasn't happened with the tight ends. If Brock Bowers can get on a team and do his thing, I think he could change the way we look at tight ends. People classify Kyle Pitts as a tight end. I know he's a tight end, but my man is more like an outside receiver to me, just the way his body is. He's not asked to do the things that they're going to ask Brock Bowers to do. And like you mentioned, Kyle Pitts didn't have the greatest quarterbacks thrown to him. Now, with Kirk Cousins over there, I expect his production to go up. There's a reason why the Jets are looking at him, too. Aaron Rodgers has never had just that guy as a tight end. I think Conklin was over there last year. Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. Conklin has his best year as a pro without Aaron Rodgers. So they guarantee they're looking at that situation and saying, now what if we match him up with another tight end? I've said this before, the best teams in the NFL, some of the better teams in the NFL, have a 1-2 combo at the tight end spot. You got your guy, and then you got the little homie in development.
And then you got your lowercase guy.
And then you got your lowercase guy, exactly.
Your guy.
You got the guy.
Your guy.
You got the dude. You got my man, you know?
I would put the dude above your guy.
Dude, all right, the dude.
You got the dude, and then you got your guy.
Your guy, and then the third guy's...
He's there. I think it is a really, really good point about the evolution of the tight end position and about whether or not Brock Bowers can change that. And I will throw on, after having gone over the history of where those quarterbacks were drafted, tight ends were drafted, he will be going to the best quarterback of any of those guys. And yeah. I know that I think that Stafford was still quarterback. I think. With Hawkinson, I'm kind of blanking on it. I don't know when Ebron was drafted, who was quarterback, not Daniel Jones. It couldn't have been Eli.
I think it was Eli.
It was still Eli? Okay, so Eli in the twilight of his career. Aaron Rodgers, still in the twilight of his career, but much more effective, would be the best quarterback to get one of those top 10 tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a change? Like, do you see that trend change?
Yeah, you can. 509... What about Laporta? Again, another good tight end that's elusive and that can run. This is going to be fun, man.
Second round pick, though.
But with first round type numbers this year,
yes.
You know? So I think you don't just jump into the cold plunge unless you're one of those people who do that for fun, right? You ease your way into it and saying, all right, let me see if this is going to work for me. I think that's what we're seeing with these tight ends is like, okay, we've seen the production. We saw the Baltimore Ravens, what they do with tight ends. Mm-hmm. We've seen the San Francisco 49ers and, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs. So there's incentive to go out and roll the dice and go get this tight end, but you're dipping your toe in it. Somebody's going to jump in and grab Bowers, and if he balls out, more people are going to start jumping in.
God, I love this conversation. We're getting to four down territory, but there's all this good sound I didn't get to. I'm being a horrible host right now. Let's get to four down territory.
This is four down territory. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
Not talking about tight ends for first down, but we are talking about a pass catcher. What star receiver should play with a chip on his shoulder this year?
Justin Jefferson got to be walking around with a chip on his shoulder. Because he's got Sam Darnold with him now. And for his whole career, he's had Kirk Cousins. We knock Kirk Cousins all the time, but he is a solid quarterback. He will win you some ball games, and he will feed your number one receiver. Sam Darnold, he's never played a full season. He only has one season completing 60% of his passes. That was in 2019. He has one season of passing over 3,000 yards. That was in 2019. Only two seasons of double-digit touchdowns and double-digit interceptions in every season as a starter. So Justin Jefferson, I saw him say he's kind of jealous that Ja'Marr Chase still gets to play with Joe Burrow. And I feel his pain because he's looking at a situation here and goes, Sam Darnold, of course, has arm talent, but he's probably not going to be it. Are the Vikings going to move up? Justin Jefferson has gone for over 1,000 yards every year he's been in this league. And people are going to doubt the Minnesota Vikings. And you know what you do if you are the Minnesota Vikings? You force feed the heck out of Justin Jefferson. I don't care. All right, he has to be the one to carry this team, even though he relies on everybody else to get him the football. So it's an opportunity for Sam Darnold to resurrect his career and for Justin Jefferson to still put up the numbers that he put up with a quarterback that is less than Kirk Cousins. I love stories like these because I want to see how they respond. What I don't want to happen is Justin Jefferson to become the new diva receiver in the NFL and be complaining and hollering and screaming about the quarterback. You know what it is. Your success relies on the quarterback, so just make some plays you're probably not supposed to make like you've been doing your whole career, and you'll be fine. But Justin Jefferson should have a chip on his shoulder. Can't wait to see it.
Second down. What's the perspective about this incoming quarterback class? A very interesting one that you find especially interesting.
Man, I was watching ESPN. I forgot who said it. And I go, that is a great perspective. He said Caleb Williams and the rest of this QB class are going to be like the first Gen Z quarterbacks. And Gen Z quarterbacks, Gen Z in general, when us millennials are talking about them, we're tough on them, right? They're not tough enough.
That's you guys. Those are my Gen Z kings and queens.
My bad. Well, just us them. They're not tough enough. Can they handle this? Can they handle that? It's a different world in the NFL. The NFL locker room is not a very fluffy, soft type of place. Yeah. That's just not what it is. Maybe in some organizations it is. And even if it is fluffy, it's still a tougher situation than a lot of people could imagine. So how are they going to be able to handle all the criticism? The thing that makes me think that these quarterbacks might be okay is that they've grown up in the social media era. They see so much being talked about them already, yeah. All their flaws. Everyone talking about Caleb wearing his pink fingernails. Everyone talking about Jaden Daniels being a one-hit wonder. They hear and see all of this. So I think they will be equipped to handle the expectations in the media. The part that questions me is the locker room, because in the locker room, it is vicious. People will talk about you, and they'll talk about you, and it sounds like hate, but it's really love. It's like, can they handle that? I don't know these individuals that well, obviously. So that would be my biggest question. But as far as the media, I think they'll be fine in that perspective. Yeah. But can they handle grown men just getting at you? Because you're no longer Caleb Williams of USC, yeah. Untouchable, only talk to certain coaches. Nah, you in this locker room, you're one of the dudes, and guys are going to challenge
you. And you're in that locker room with 25, 26, 27-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 32-year-olds. Like, it's no longer just everyone has the same experiences you have. That's a really interesting take. Third down. Jets revealed their new uniforms, looking pretty good. When should the Hawks make a change?
This is what I think should happen. I think if a coach is with you for 10 or more years, and he is gone, you need to switch your uniforms up. Make that his era. That was the Pete Carroll era of those uniforms. You can identify uniforms with a coach. So with that being said, I think they should make the move like this year or next year. Not this year, obviously, because he's got to go through all this stuff. But change the uniforms. Go back to the 90s or whatever the heck. I think that's what everybody wants anyway. They want those throwback uniforms. But I like the Seahawks uniforms. I'm not mad at them. But when I see those, I just think of Pete Carroll, Legion of Boom, Marshawn Lynch. Like, that was a special era. There wasn't no average era of football. So because it wasn't average, let Pete and Marshawn and Cliff Avril and all those guys have those uniforms. You switch it up and throw it back or change just something a little bit. Honor those dudes that way. I know they want us to forget about them. At least that's what Michael Bennett said. We will never forget. And every time we see those uniforms, at least me, I just associate it with Legion of Boom.
Yeah. Do you know a change that you would make? Like, I wonder if it's like, okay, is there less of the action green? I don't know.
I would just make it as simple as possible. I love simple uniforms. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Fourth down. If the Hawks do not draft a quarterback early, what are their options in 2025?
So we had this conversation last week.
Yeah.
Kind of like, all right, well, are they going to get a quarterback? And I go, look, you've already used a third-round pick on Sam Howell. So essentially, are you going to be willing to draft two quarterbacks in the same year? I don't think they're going to do that. But they're going to have some options, right? Russell Wilson's on a one-year deal. Justin Fields is going to try to figure it out over there as well. Next year, these are guys who are going to be available. Not to say that these are the guys they should go for, but you'll have options. All right, you got Trey Lance. This is 2025. Sam Darnold, Brissett. I'm not saying get him. Drew Lock, Marcus Mariota, Zach Williams, Mike White, Jake Browning, Case Keenum, Dave Miller, Mac Jones, Mason Rudolph, Carson Wentz. You got Stidham. You got Winston. You got, hey, Flacco. We got Flacco. We got Jimmy Garoppolo. We got Andy Dalton. We got Deshaun Watson, who possibly could be out there as well. I know y'all going to get me for even mentioning Deshaun Watson, so simmer down now. I'm not saying that they should say, don't worry, next year we have all these veterans to choose from. I'm just saying that there are going to be options out there. And as I read that list, right, I'm talking myself out of it. I go, well, maybe they do draft the guy early.
I was talking myself out of it as right? You were reading the list. You were two names in, and I was like, I'm out.
Also, Dak Prescott could be available as well. Now, you
that
get
one's
a, you have a guy like Dak available.
But
or
a lot
also,
of competition also, for Dak.
So these are the guys who could be franchise tag. I just named you like the lower tier guys.
Yeah.
So now the franchise tag guys, you have Jared Goff who could be available. You have Tua who could be available, and you have Prescott that could be available. Those three are the ones who are like, okay, let's experiment with that. I think Jared Goff has shown that he can play ball in this league. I think Tua is good to go, and Prescott doesn't win the big one, but you know that he's going to win you some games. I say all this just to say that there are options for next year. I still think they might draft a quarterback late, not a guy that we expect to see. But if they were to draft another quarterback, I'm like, you essentially drafted two quarterbacks in 1 year. Wouldn't make sense to me, but I wouldn't put that by John Schneider in the game, but next year there will be some options for him.
Can I tell you something that I found myself doing?
What's up?
I simultaneously defend Geno from people who say he's a god-awful quarterback because I think that his stats are solid. I think he is a fine quarterback. He's clearly no one's Patrick Mahomes. He's also not part of that like second tier of guys, but he's fine. He is not as bad as this team. Like, he is not the reason this team struggled last year, nor the reason they didn't make the playoffs. I have also been operating under the assumption that he's not your quarterback next year, which is interesting because he's under contract and this is yet another year where he can prove it. Why am I doing that?
Because he isn't the answer for the next four or five years.
Yeah.
Age is going to determine that and just what we think are his capabilities. Can he come out and put together a year and go to the Pro Bowl and have numbers that kind of quiet the haters out? Yeah, he could. But I think that we just haven't seen enough to say this is going to be the guy moving forward. We've seen enough to say I'm good with him for a few years, see if he can make the playoffs and make a run. But until you get that just for sure thing, which is hard to get, you're always going to have questions.
If you're already not a fan of the Red Sox, I'm going to give you more ammo coming up next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. So let's find out what's trending. We are starting with the Mariners, where one Red Sox TV announcer, Dave O'Brien, not especially a fan of the Trident home run celebration.
And I think you're absolutely right on these home run celebrations. Come up with it sort of on the fly, as opposed to what some teams are doing, like, hey, hand the guy a trident that we had an engineer, you know, 3,000 miles away, create in a lab somewhere, mail to you.
Yeah, and there's the medal. It's going to go around a little bit, like, you know. But I actually think when the year's up, you come up with something new. You don't need the laundry cart 2-3 years in a row. I mean, that was a couple years ago. Like, find something new.
Half the fun is something new.
Look at Coors Medal.
I don't know. Sounds like you guys are a bunch of haters who can't accept that getting someone to construct a trident and send it to you would be pretty cool, although I thought that they got it off of Amazon.
Dave O'Brien.
He's a hater.
Come on, dude. Just let the game changes. The game changes. These athletes change. If the skip is okay with it, it's none of your business, sir. I don't know what they do in Boston. They probably do nothing if he feels so strongly about this trident. And you know what? Mariners are living in your brain rent-free. Like, why are you thinking about us? Of all the teams, I guarantee, yeah, we played y'all. I get that. Opening series and whatnot. But we're in that dome, Dave. So just mind your business and let us do what we do. Y'all having a better season than us anyway, are you? Actually, they're not doing so hot. But, yeah, man, this is a family business, sir. You mind yours and let us do what we got to do. They're 9-8, so I guess they're a bit more better.
Also, like, I'm just saying the idea of, like, do something new, then do something new. Every single year you're supposed to have a brand new home run celebration.
Yeah.
If something works and the guys are having fun with it, who cares? Genuinely, who cares?
I bet you don't like the Mariners dancing after the game, too. You know, they do their little kick that they do when they win.
Yeah, I don't know.
A circle kick.
It's a weird thing to be. And I can't even insult Boston because they've been such a successful franchise. Like, I wish that I could throw out, well, maybe they should do something new and get to the playoffs. And then here I am covering the Mariners, and I can't. And they're giving me no ammo to throw at them.
No.
But yeah, I thought that was a little lame to, like, really take up issue with the home run trident. I don't know, Dave. Maybe you should go get a trident. In a meaningless final game of the regular season, Rocket center Boban Marjanovic. Is it Marjanovic, right?
Marjanovic.
I always say it wrong. Had a chance to make Clippers fans very, very happy. Why? Because... This is great. There's a promotion that the Clippers have where fans receive a free Chick-fil-A sandwich if an opposing player goes 0-for-2 from the line. So he found out about it. He knew what was at stake, and he delivered for the people.
Fans are getting excited here. There might potentially be some free chicken on the board if he misses the second free throw.
Oh, man, free chicken on the board.
Yeah, so that's why the fans are getting a little frothy.
Oh, they're pointing to the Bobo's playing with the crowd. Say, you want chicken?
Here's your job.
Oh, he gave him chicken. He's a man of the people. He's a man of the people.
He did that on purpose?
He did. He gave out free chicken.
I like that. Did he do that on purpose when he's pointing at himself going like, on me. Obviously.
No, that was fun. I mean, it's not hard for our guy to miss two free throws. He shoots 64% from the line. They were up 105-97. In the fourth quarter at the time. They still won the game. Great job there, man. He is a man of the people. I've heard stories about Marjanovic, and great personality, very personable. And, this is just good old-fashioned fun. And everyone loves some free stuff. I remember when I've only been to, like, two Laker games my whole life because I didn't have the money to do it when I was growing up. And there was some promotion where we got free tacos. Now, I'd never been to a Laker game when they were giving out the free tacos, but I remember watching on TV like, free tacos, come on, let's get it. You know, that's good fan participation, and I applaud them.
Speaking of fan participation, one fan had the right idea here. On Sunday Night Baseball, a Dodgers fan used a sleight of hand to keep a home run ball hit by San Diego's Manny Machado while still looking like he'd thrown it back onto the field, because you want to be a loyal fan, right? You want to stick it to him, but that's a pretty valuable home run ball. The trick? He kept a spare ball in the pocket of his jacket. Buster only caught up with him.
Yeah, so I'm here with Renan, who's got to tell us the story of the old switcheroo. He made great plans for this.
Well, I got caught, but every ball hawk out here knows to come prepared for a reason like this. You know, a hated Padre hits a home run. You don't throw it back. You're going to get booed mercilessly by the Dodger faithful. That's happened to me in the past before. So I try to come prepared, and I put the ball in my pocket just in case it happened. And I knew Machado, big, big power hitter, was up, and it could happen. So I was ready.
All right, what kind of reaction did you get around you then?
Nobody in the stands called me out for the switcheroo. Everybody high-fived me and was happy I threw it back. The telecast seems to be the only people that caught it. I did admit to a few people here what I had done, but yeah, I got away scot-free from the crowd.
All right, what are you going to do with the baseball?
I'm definitely going to keep it. The wife won't like it because I try to collect baseballs a lot, and I have too many as it is, but this one's for sure going on the mantle.
So why is your wife mad at you?
We don't have enough time in the telecast to talk about that.
Thanks, Renan.
I loved this interview, and good on that fan. I mean, who cares? I get keeping the home run ball, and I get it is equally as fun when a fan throws it back, but, like, I can't blame the guy. It's Manny Machado.
Nah, and he was prepared. He stayed ready. He ain't got to get ready.
Because he was fooled once. He was burned once. He was like, yeah, last time I tried to keep it and I got booed. So he was like, never again.
Nah, not again. And I'm just jealous because now I said I didn't go to a lot of Laker games. I went to a lot of Dodger games, and I was a kid showing up with his glove.
Ready for it.
hey, it's about to go down. Never came my way. So good for him, though.
I think it's really, really funny. The latest Fanatics uniform malfunction. Can they get this right? Apparently not. Bryce Miller was forced to wear the pants of the Mariners bat boy during his start on Friday because the ones he was issued didn't fit properly. That story from Ryan Divish. Lots of weird things happening from T-Mobile, from the Fanatics pants to apparently the media room food looked awful. Ryan Divish was posting photos. Come on, y'all. Let's get it together. I know it's early, but season started.
That's embarrassing, man. You got to go to the bad boy and be like, what waist are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's your length? Yeah, hey, I'm going to need those. Come up out of those. Let's switch it up. Yeah, they got to do something about this. The names are small. The white pants are see-through. They rip easily. It's just all bad. I remember, this reminds me of... for some reason, just Puma NFL jerseys, like the worst era in football jerseys ever. Puma has no business making football jerseys, and apparently Fanatics doesn't either. They got to fix this.
If you could choose a brand that would make jerseys for your team.
Oh, it's easy. I already do it.
Well, Nike.
It's Nike all
day. What if it was like a random one? Like you were like, let's go FUBU.
FUBU, oh, snap.
You know? I'm just saying, like you can pick a brand where you're like, I want to see what this version looks like.
I mean, if it's not Nike, then you have to go like Adidas, right?
I guess you would have to, but you wouldn't be happy about it. All right. Next up, South Carolina news anchor Julia Westerman won the media lottery to play around at Augusta National today following the conclusion of the Masters. So glad they're letting women there. It'll be her first round of golf ever.
This is bull. This is bull. You don't deserve that. I've waited my whole life.
This would be like Stacey winning that lottery.
Waiting my whole life to get to the Masters. I still ain't got there, man. I've been on the list every single year trying to win the lottery.
We love to see it.
And she goes, and you know what she's going to do? The groundskeeper at Augusta, she's going to ruin your course. There's going to be divots everywhere. She's not going to replace the divots. She's not going to rake the sand. She's going to drive the golf cart too close to the green. She's not prepared for this moment. Get someone else who is.
I love this. I love this. She has never played around before, and the first one is going to be at Augusta National.
The hardest course in America.
You know what? I think they should film it. I think they should track it. There should be no mulligans.
Like, pace of play is going to be so bad. She's going to slow it down, man. It's going to be like 6-hour round for y'all out there.
So many other reporters are responding to her going, how does it feel to live my dream?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I hate you.
Like I'm happy for you, but I'm hating at the same time.
Finders keepers. It's her round. She won it, and now she gets to play.
Give it up. She ain't even going to appreciate it. She's going to be like my kid when he's tired. Like, can we go home now?
This is the way I feel about it. You didn't let women for so long that I'm going to... Great. Fantastic. I'm so glad this happened. And I hope that she makes everyone wait for hours.
They're going to hate her out there. They're not, though. She'll keep pace of play. She'll play with someone who plays, and she'll be fine. I'm just hating because I'm jealous.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll be really fun. I'm happy for her. I think it's funny. MLB.com's Daniel Kramer is going to join us at the top of the hour, and we're going to ask him lots of questions about what's going on with this team. I don't know that he's going to have answers, but we're going to try our best to find out why so many Mariners are starting slow and what the heck is going on with Julio. All that coming your way next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Can I tell you something, Bump, that's really grinding my gears?
Yes, please.
Well, first, to backtrack, someone saying Augusta National has always allowed women to play. They didn't allow women as members until 2012.
That's crazy.
And they also did not allow black people as members until 1990. So I don't know that
1990?
I don't know that saying...
Goodness gracious.
If you're going to go on here and say, well, someone could play, I don't know that that's quite the same as saying that it's...
Not all someone.
Not all someone's. It's not a fair and open course to everyone. And yeah, it's part of history. You can mention it. It doesn't mean it's not a beautiful course and not an important part of sports culture. But saying they could still play... I got to take issue with it.
Hold on. I got to say something real quick.
Yeah.
1990s when they allowed black folks there.
According to the LA Times.
Tiger won his first Masters in 1997.
So
seven years after. That is crazy to me.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
Again, I'm just saying. Still a beautiful course. The thing that's really, really bothering me, though, is something that I don't know if I'm going to be right about eventually. And so I hesitated having a segment about it. I think I will be right, But if not, it's okay because it's still an interesting conversation. I am seeing a lot of doubt about Julio being a star. And I understand that he's had a really slow start to the season. And I don't know when that's going to change. And I am not seeing someone that's having, you know, some unlucky struggles. I'm seeing bad at-bats. Like, I'm seeing a bad start. I also think Julio is a superstar. And I think he has sky-high potential and a sky-high ceiling. And the idea that a slow start this year or last means that he's not the best player we've seen since, what, Alex Rodriguez? It doesn't compute for me.
Yeah, that's the tough part about being a young man with his potential and having him shown us what he can do already is that he's so early in his career that people are looking for reasons not to believe. Now, I'm no psychic, Stacey, but something tells me he's going to be fine and he's going to bounce back. Now, there's a world where he doesn't bounce back and he's considered a bust and all that stuff. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think it's a combination of things. He's struggling. He's getting paid a lot of money, and this whole team is struggling. If he were struggling and the team's playing okay, then I think you can kind of cover up some of his flaws or whatnot. But because everything that could go wrong is going wrong with this team, rotation hasn't been great. They've been bad, but they've been great. The bullpen is banged up, hasn't been great. The fielding has been great. The bats haven't been great. You look for blame, mm-hmm. and naturally you're going to blame Julio. You're going to blame Service. You're going to blame DePoto. And you're going to sprinkle in other blame, too. The other people are going to get some blame. But this is just the position that he's in. And this is I hope he has a great mentor. Someone's talking him through this and about this. Like, look, fans are going to love you when you are hot. When you are not, they're going to talk about you. They're going to say, he shouldn't be getting this. He should be traded there. What are we doing? Now, I haven't heard anyone say anything about trading, but there is a world in a scenario where even that comes up. Mm-hmm. Fans react. They are irrational sometimes, and they're and especially Mariners fans because they've been scarred so many times.
Yep.
So, yeah, I understand the concern. I'm concerned. I want Julio to get things going. But to be ready to kick him to the curb or at least allude to that or put out that type of energy would just be crazy to me because I think he's gonna get things right.
From the Mac and Jack's text line, 253, performance is everything. Potential sucks, says Bill Parcells. Has Julio not performed, though? I mean, I know that he had a slow start last year. He's had a slow start this year. This is a two-time All-Star. This is someone that was the story of the home run derby in his first appearance when he didn't even win it. He's a two-time Silver Slugger. He was Rookie of the Year in 2022 for the American League. This is someone who has delivered. He has reached milestones sooner than many other Mariners have ever before. And if your standard of what a great player is Ken Griffey Jr., I hate to break it to you that very few players are ever going to touch that. I think Julio can come the closest. This is not me saying he's going to be that. This is me saying you as a Mariners fan, me as a Mariners fan, have not had star talent in so long that while it's fine to complain about Julio's slow start, and that's exactly how I started the show, you can at the same time know that he's a star.
Yeah, you know he's a star. And stars go through their troubles, man. It's tough when you look at the Dodgers roster and see all the things that are happening there with guys just balling. Naturally, you want to look at that and go, how come we can't do that? Julio's supposed to be part of those guys too.
Yeah.
And even though baseball is one of the more individual team sports that's out there, you still kind of feed off the energy of your team. And if you are a guy like Julio that is expected to perform and no one else is performing around you, you're going to feel the weight of the world a bit more than everyone else.
Yeah.
This is all part of the maturation process of Julio Rodriguez. This is part of the maturation process of the Mariners organization in general to help him through this. They haven't had a talent like this in a long time. It's not like these guys are used to being in these situations with this type of talent as far as Julio. There's a learning process that's going. The longer this continues, though, obviously the more concerned everyone is going to be.
Yeah.
But just like you said, two-time All-Star, has all these other accolades. he's done enough to make you believe that he's going to find his way out of this. What I don't like is people treating this like a young quarterback in the NFL. Oh, 2 years in, he's done. He can't get it done.
Yeah,
man,
yeah,
give him some reps. He'll be fine, I think.
I absolutely agree. 253, Kyle Lewis won Rookie of the Year, too, and couldn't maintain. That was in a COVID season, an abbreviated season, not to take away from what Kyle's done. But also, Kyle's stats never touched Julio. Julio has put up legit eye-popping numbers.
Yeah, and Kyle was hurt all the time. His knee jacked up.
This should have been my silver lining to end the last hour. To end 10 p.m., I said, oh, well, a silver lining is that you're only two games back, and you gave great stats about, like, hey, don't just hang on to that, though. The silver lining should have been the flip of the open. The open was something's wrong with Julio. The flip should be, but Julio's your best player and can be really special.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really, really frustrating to watch his at-bats right now. There is also a lot of hope and expectation that he meet his ceiling. And if he does, you have a generational talent.
Yeah. You see the ability there. Obviously, you have to connect the dots and have it all flow. But he's done that. He's done it 2 years in a row now. So he deserves a little bit of grace.
All right, you guys. Well, let's ask Daniel Kramer what's going on with Julio, what's going on with the rest of the team. I'm curious as to what he sees in their at-bats and when, importantly, he thinks they could start to improve. He joins us next. Don't go anywhere.